This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
The Albemarle County Board of Supervisors has put the study of the Eastern Connector on hold for a few years until more data can be collected about how county residents move around. They made their decision after viewing a presentation on the final recommendations of the Eastern Connector Corridor Location Study. The matter has been referred to the Metropolitan Planning Organization for further negotiations between the city and the county. The city will view the presentation sometime in November at a date to be determined. Charlottesville Tomorrow's recording of the presentation given to the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors begins with Juan Diego Wade, transportation planner for Albemarle County.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to introduce the Eastern Connector study. The Eastern Connector is a project that was identified in a long-range transportation study. The city and the county jointly funded the study, and they directed a steering committee to direct the consultant and select alternative alignments. PBS and J Engineering Firm out of Chantilly, Virginia, was hired to conduct this study, and Lewis Grimm is here today to review the steering committee's recommendations and a lot of the background work that we went into to come up with the recommendations. And he will go through the presentation. You can ask questions either during the presentation or after. Lewis.
It's coming back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today to give you the overview presentation on the project. And again, this is the same presentation set up for presentation both to the Board of Supervisors and to the Charlottesville City Council. What I'd like to do is just kind of highlight briefly some of the action items, kind of the intermediate, you know, midterm, and long term, and then go into kind of the background that establishes why these came out. What we're looking for in the very short term, the next year or so, is to move ahead with things that are already in progress. The improvements being made at the 250 corridor, some intersection improvements, some timing improvements, increasing the transit service frequency on the 250 corridor into the Pantops area. But the most important thing, I think, from your body's perspective, is kind of adding the proposed four-lane concept three, alternative three, linking the railroad corridor with Route 20 into the fiscally constrained regional long-range transportation plan. Beyond that, there also is a short-term thing, taking the two other final alternatives we looked at along the Profit Road corridor and the Polar Grounds Road corridor, adding those into the long-range plan, but as unfunded needs-type projects. So it puts a placeholder in for those projects. And then moving ahead to initiate the detailed planning, engineering, environmental studies associated with Alternative 3. Once that initial year or so of activity is done, then beyond that, in the next 3 to 5 years, getting the funding available, obtaining that federal, state, and local sources to construct whatever comes out of that more detailed engineering study, continuing to expand public transportation improvements, moving ahead then with more detailed studies of the other two options, alternative one and two on Profit and Polar Grounds, moving those alignments into the county comprehensive plan. So again, it's a placeholder, not constructing them, but saying that here's a corridor we want to pursue, and also then doing other studies of other potential Ravanna River crossing improvements. Because one of the things that came out of the project was that this is only one piece of a much larger system, and a lot of things need to keep going on over a period of some years. And then in that longer frame, say, out looking out 15, 20 years, get the funding necessary to make any additional crossing improvements and continue to improve public transportation from Pantops to downtown Charlottesville and from downtown Charlottesville north along the 29 corridor. So those are the basic recommendations that were developed by the members of the steering committee. And now let me take a couple of minutes and kind of say how we reached that point and what those recommendations are. And it really all began kind of saying, well, where do we start from? It all begins with the 2025 UNJAM long-range transportation plan, additional input from the city and the county in terms of the project as it began, what's the history of traffic in the corridor, What are the projected changes in population employment that affect additional traffic in the study area? And then what that means in terms of future traffic and future congestion levels. In terms of the 2025 plan, that really is saying we want to do all these things, improve connections, improve mobility, make choices that help foster more livable communities. So that's kind of a driving force. The more detailed analysis was done as part of the 2025 plan, specifically called out the Eastern Connector as one element of a fairly large number of alternative studies to be done, including the Free State, Northern Free State Road further to the north, and also the US 250 East Pantops Multimodal Study. So it's all part of the larger system, and I think that's a very important point to keep in mind. All that was then coalesced by the work that the city staff and the county staff did to put together the request for proposals, which we responded to in the summer, early fall of 2006, which said, here's what we want you to do. Look at several alternative alignments to figure out a way to connect the area along US 250 to the east of Route 20 and the area along US 29 between Railroad and Profit Road, and do a very thorough examination of those alternatives. So as we were selected, as we then sat and interacted with the group, this was the recommended study area defined by the consultant team. It said, well, we defined what the area limits along Route 29 are, Profit Road on the north, Raya Road on the south. We know what we're looking at on US 250 from basically Route 20. We'll go as far over as Interstate 64 interchange, and then the other direction is just kind of trying to get it to create a study area boundary. So this white area is where we concentrated our analysis on. Doing a little bit of background and analysis to say, well, what have the changes been in this area over the last 5 or 6 years? I said, what are the changes on 29, on 250, on Raya Road, on Profit Road? Between the year 2001 and 2006 is a summary. And clearly the place that we identified that was really highlighting the most was on US 250. And really the High Street to Route 20 section are those two major intersections on the east side and the west side of the Ravanna River. That went from about 30,000 vehicles a day in the year 2001, according to VDOT's traffic count program, to about 52,000 vehicles a day in the year 2006, so a 73% increase in volume across that one length. The others also show significant length, but that was the one that really stood out the most. Displayed another way, it kind of shows what the relative change is from one to the other. You can see clearly that segment from High Street to Route 20 has a much larger bump, a much larger change than the areas further to the east or further to the west in the 250 corridor.
Can you go back a couple of slides?
Certainly. I think I can do this here.
Okay. Rye, US, okay, this is US 29 from Rye Road to Holly Mead, 4351,000.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So Rye Road itself has increased from 25 to 28.
Correct.
Thank you. I had misread that when
no,
you had it.
No problem.
I thought we were talking about 51,000 vehicles.
But US 29, Rye Road from 29 to Hillsdale has gone up that much. What we don't show here is from Hillsdale around to Park Street.
Right. We don't show farther is the eastern section of Rye.
Right, right. And again, it's the thing of, well, how much information do you present on a table? I could have a table that would have nothing but numbers on it.
Sure.
And none of us would be able to understand it, including me.
Well, except one of your recommended route actually includes that section of road that we don't have the numbers for. I mean, you're suggesting we take that section from 29 along Rio, and then your option three goes through the park from Rio Road, from a section of Rio Road where we don't have data on the change in traffic. So it's not like it's just another piece of data. It's kind of a critical one.
I think they have the data. He didn't put it on this table.
That's correct.
I've seen it before, but I think it would be helpful to include that piece in the summary tables for traffic that are used.
Okay.
I agree with David.
You have them from chart, too, and I'm sure we can
appreciate that comment.
And the traffic's probably not a whole lot different on that segment than it is on the prior segment. A little bit higher, probably, but not a lot higher.
I don't know. Whenever I go to Pantops, I get on that segment, and I'm east of Hillsdale, and everybody in Dunlora and everybody in all those other subdivisions that goes to Pantops probably doesn't go
to 29
in Hillsdale. But the ones that are going to Pantops, yeah. I'm just saying.
What I'm saying is most sections of that road seem to me to have pretty similar traffic. But we need to have that data.
Okay, but that is a good point. We will make sure that gets in there. Then going back to the slide where we came back from again, went back and said, well, let's look at what the observed changes have been in terms of population, employment. This illustrates just the population growth table. And you can see that there has been, you know, continuing growth. The projections for the year 2010 within the overall study area, with the regional area, is about 229,000 people, projected to continue to grow through the year 2030, that's the current plan year, to about 277,000. So it's a significant increase, about 39% from 2000 to 2030 over that 30-year
period. This is the entire MSA, right? It's not...
Yeah, it's over the entire metropolitan area. And if you look at kind of where that's anticipated to occur, this being on the employment growth side, the graphic says the more colors that you see there are the ones that kind of highlight where more change is going to occur. Within that entire region, the region being that whole yellow bounded area that you see there, it's about a 40% increase in employment. It's about 116% increase within the defined study area for the Eastern Connector study area. So a lot of growth is going to happen at the regional level. A lot more, relatively speaking, is going to happen within our study area. So what does that really mean when we start looking at what the projected traffic is? Again, this is information highlighted from using the regional traffic forecasting model for 2 years. The year 2005, that's the base year on the left. On the right, the year 2025, that's the current long-range plan adopted year. And saying, well, if we look at what's happening with the traffic crossing the 250 bridge over the Ravanna River, what's the magnitude of that traffic, what's the distribution of that traffic now and in the year 2025. Same basic patterns, you know, continue over those 2 years, but the bands get bigger. So it's saying we're not going to see any major changes in the directionality of travel, but we're going to see a lot more demand going across that section. Another way to illustrate that is we went back to the information compiled as part of the work for Meadow Creek Parkway, and particularly the interchange at Meadow Creek Parkway and the 250 bypass, and said, well, where's that traffic coming from? Where's that going to, you know, as it reaches the bridge point? This shows you just a snapshot to say during the morning peak hour, traffic in the westbound direction only, about 63% of that is coming from somewhere further to the east of Route 20, about 25% coming south on Route 20 and making a right turn. And then when you get to the other side of the bridge, at the High Street intersection, about 72% of the traffic on the bridge keeps going to the west, but about 23% makes the left turn on the High Street to come into downtown. And so that kind of orientation you can define each of the different intersections.
Let me ask you a question. So that 72% of the traffic that's coming from Pantops and places beyond, they cross over the bridge, and right now they're going straight on the bypass. Do we know what percentage of those cars are heading to somewhere on 29 north of Rio?
Yes. We do have some of that, and I've got some of these other slides that kind of highlight some of that as well. So this is just shooting for the morning peak hour in the westbound direction. If you look at it the other way to say, well, in the afternoon, you know, what happens in the eastbound direction during the p.m. peak hour? And again, you're saying there that of all the traffic that's counted going across that bridge, where is it coming from going eastbound? Well, about 53% of it's coming, you know, somewhere from the west on the bypass. About 35% is coming up on High Street and making a right turn. Then when it goes across over to the Route 20 intersection, about 25% makes the left turn to go north on 20, and about 67% continues to go east. So that's kind of the major split at that point.
Do you have any reason why, do you know why the 35% that comes from downtown Charlottesville is a bigger figure coming out in the evening than it was going in the morning? It was more like 25% in the morning.
Well, there are a couple of things. One, we're dealing here with just percentages, not the raw number. You know, if you look at the numbers vary a little bit, so you get that kind of, you know, differential. It's also a situation where if you look at, you know, different travel patterns. You know, in the morning, it's predominantly work trip oriented. In the afternoon, you've got work trips, you've got shopping trips, you've got a lot of other activity going on. So I'm sure that some portion of that 35% that are making the right turn on High Street are workers leaving downtown. But there are also probably people who are leaving to go to the shopping areas up on Pantops or to go visit friends or whatever out that way. But it just kind of shows you that that linkage is an important linkage to and from High Street as you're going across there. What we also did on that then was say, well, let's kind of look at a series of those figures, westbound and eastbound. So westbound in the morning again, beginning at the interchange of 250 and Interstate 64, we're saying, well, about 55% of the total traffic crossing the bridge can be traced back as far as that interchange. We didn't go further east than that. If you continue along then, you get more people coming out from the areas to the north and south of 250, and now we're up to like 63%. Here we see again the 25% of the traffic coming south on Route 20 and other traffic coming out that aggregates to 100% right at the bridge. We cross the bridge and they start to split, 23% making the left turn to go south on High Street, the 72% continuing west on the bypass. When we get up then to Park, we see about 12% of the people getting off at that interchange, and it's about a 50-50 split. About half of them make a right turn to go north, about half of them make a left turn to go south into downtown. Come over a little bit further onto to McIntyre, it's about 11% of the people making the left turn to come into downtown that way. But you still have 49%, almost half of all the traffic crossing the bridge is still going west on the bypass. When you get up to the intersection at Hydraulic and 250, it splits about 50-50, about 27% going north up Hydraulic and up to 29, the other 22% continuing to the west on the 250 bypass. Then in the afternoon, you kind of flip it and see, well, where are people coming from that are going across that bridge? And again, it's somewhat of a balance, a smaller percentage, a total of about 28%, you know, by the time you combine the traffic from Hydraulic and from 250 bypass heading east. Go in and add additional traffic, in this case about 8% of the PM peak hour traffic coming from McIntyre Road, about 9% of the traffic from Park that makes a right turn, some southbound traffic, about 8% coming in there. So we're up to about 53% again just before we get to the High Street intersection, and that's where we get another major increment of traffic coming out of downtown. They go across to the Route 20 bridge, or excuse me, the Route 20 intersection, and they start to diversify again. Moving on ahead to the east end, you've still got that 67%. You lose about 12% of that to the north and the south of 250. As you go past the Pantops area, by the time you get over to the Route I-64 interchange again, it's about 54-55%. So it kind of gives you an idea of what are the major corridors that are being used through here.
What was that number on Park Street again? It seemed like it was like 8% in the morning and 7% in the afternoon. Is that?
It is about 7%. And again, remember, it's on a percentage basis. It's not the exact number.
I know.
You know, if you look at the numbers, they're all pretty close. It's just what percentage number at the bridge you're dividing it by.
That must be the ones we expect to divert with an eastern connector, is those people going up Park Street.
No, I think that's certainly they would be a candidate for being diverted, but there's also the people who are coming from north along 29 who choose not to go down Park Street right now because it's such an unappealing route in, and instead they're coming down to getting on 250 at Hydraulic, or they might be getting on 250 somewhere else. It's those cars that are potentially part of that eastern connector traffic, and it sounds like we're challenged in our ability to gather good data because these are hypothetical trips that we can't actually measure today other than through the graphic that looks at the density of future development activities. We don't have origin and destination studies that are usable at this point, am I correct, to determine how much of the traffic that goes over that bridge actually originated north of Rio on 29?
It is difficult because it is basically using the best available tools, which are the traffic forecasting models. And there are certain assumptions that are built into that. But I think if you look at the distribution of traffic that, and again, the numbers that I just went through on those directional diagrams, those are actual traffic volumes making a left turn or making a right turn. You know, you don't know exactly where those people are coming from or exactly where they're going, but it gives you a reasonable approximation of what the major movements are. But again, the whole process, the whole travel demand forecasting process is what's used to justify any transportation improvement in this whole metropolitan area, any metropolitan area in the state, any metropolitan area in the country. You know, so the billions and billions of dollars that are spent every year are all being, you know, assessed and justified based upon the results of those traffic forecasting processes, whether it's for transit or highways or whatever it might be.
Origin destination studies are not being done very often simply because they're extremely expensive.
But we're about to have a major access to origin and destination data because of the upcoming
study.
And that's going to give us potentially some really useful information in informing the decision about do we want to have an Eastern Connector, and if so,
the household study for the 2010 census.
2010 census, right. But those, and I think that they try to build that data into these forecasting tools. You still have to try to overlay that onto the total number of trips in some fashion. And I think you'll find in most cases when the origin destination study was done on 29, it didn't differ a whole lot from the forecasting. And we've only done it one. Of course, it was only done one time, and that was at a cost of several million dollars.
But that is important. Again, it is a continuing process, and there is more information that's always available every year, every other year type of thing. So the more you go along and look at these issues, you have better information to make your decision on, as you go further through the process. Continuing along then, well, I think one of the things that I think was very, very interesting when we looked at, well, what's planned for our study area? Again, the area highlighted here in gray. And this shows the projects currently in the adopted long-range plan for the region. You have the dark blue projects or the arterial projects, in this case, proposed improvements along US 29, and then also the connection from Rio down to Route 250, which is the Meadow Creek Parkway project. You also have then a number of collector projects that are basically parallel projects to 29, Hillsdale Drive as an example. But you say, well, where's the other project within the study area? And there really aren't any, because that had not been, a major priority. There are other projects in other parts of the region. What we then did is say, well, let's see what the implications of that long-range plan are between what we have today, the base year 2005 network, putting the 2005 projected traffic volumes onto that network, and what kind of level of service that we see. And level of service is basically like your grades in school. You want an A or a B or a C. A D is, well, you can live with it, but it's not great. You don't want it. You don't want to see an E, you don't want to see an F. Where you see oranges and reds, those are the E and F conditions, the very highest levels of undesirable congestion. And these kind of, not surprisingly, point out the areas where you experience congestion today. Along the 29 corridor, along the 250 bypass corridor, and along 250 east of where the bypass ends. When you project that into the year 2025, with the alternative zero, which is the existing base year, the existing long-range transportation plan network for the year 2025, you see the colors don't really change a whole lot. A little bit of improvement on some sections of 29 where there are some proposed improvements, but other than that, it's still going to be a very heavily congested facility. The 250 bypass is going to be heavily used, and 29, east of the river, it's going to be very heavily used. So with that, we basically said, well, let's look at what those projected volumes are going to be. Again, model number generated volume at all the existing crossing points of the Ravanna River, whether it's Interstate 64, US 250 itself, Profit Road. The total for those in the year 2005 and 2025 is showing a projected increase of about 47% over that period of 20 years. With Profit Road showing the highest percentage increase, going from about 4,200 to about 10,000 a day. US 250 projected to go from about 48,000 to about 68,000, about a 42% increase. And Interstate 64 showing about a 44% increase, but going from 42,000 to about 60,000, but it's a four-lane freeway. If you just pull out and look at US 250 and Profit Road to say, well, those are really the more localized trips. A lot of the traffic on Interstate 64 is just passing through the area. They don't have an origin here. They don't have a destination here. And you see that's about a 50% increase projected between the year 2005, the base year, and the year 2025. So all that kind of came together and said, well, that probably defines what the project need factors would be. There has been significant observed increase historically in traffic growth in the study area because of population employment growth in this area. There's projected to be additional population employment growth over the next 20 to 25 years. Where you have more growth, there's going to be more regional travel demand. We also know that there's going to be projected traffic demand across the Urbana River, particularly on the Route 250 corridor. And as we highlight on that one graphic, the currently adopted long-range plan does not appear to address many of the current and future travel demands in the region. Not that it doesn't do a good job, but it doesn't solve all the problems. So with that, and with a lot of input from the members of the steering committee, we developed a series of alternatives for testing and evaluation that were responsive to those travel patterns, current and future, that took input from the public, from different agencies, and the members of the steering committee, and basically began with the idea of using two-lane collector-type roadways to say this is not a bypass facility. This is kind of an important link of the existing system. We want to keep it kind of at a two-lane, you know, facility concept as best we can. We initially had about six or eight basic independent alternatives, and we also looked at some combinations where we might combine two or three of those alternatives together to get some combinations. Any of those would, of course, have to be additions to the existing adopted long-range plan for the region. And when we started trying to, you know, evaluate those alternatives, one of the things that became very obvious is there aren't a whole lot of empty spaces in the study area we're dealing with. There's a lot of existing development there, whether it's residential, commercial. There's a lot of, you know, wetlands areas. There's a lot of historic areas. There's a lot of other constraints to try to work around. So it's a very challenging assignment to try to get from the 29 corridor over to the 250 corridor. What we came out with, again, working very closely with the steering committee members, was kind of a final group of concepts for presentation, for analysis. Beginning with the alternative zero or the currently adopted long-range plan, an alternative that would be a profit road relocated corridor, a second being a Polo Grounds Road corridor, and a third being a Rio Road to Route 20 corridor, generally via Penn Park. And this illustrates where those concepts are. The profit road corridor on the north in yellow, labeled as alternative one, the Polo Grounds Road corridor through the center, in the dark blue, labeled as alternative two, and the one in the lower level, the purple one, you know, being the alternative three, the general, you know, concept corridor definition, and showing how that would relate then to the Meadow Creek Parkway facility from Rio Road down to the 250 bypass. So when we did the testing and evaluation of those, one of the important factors was saying how much traffic would each of these alternatives attract with this improvement? How much would it divert from the from US 250? We found, for example, that if you're looking at US 250 in the year 2025, it's projected to carry about 65,500 vehicles per day, and Profit Road would be about a little bit less than 11,000 per day. So there's no new route, there's no diversion off of US 250. If we made some improvements to Profit Road, we get some interaction back and forth, but we wouldn't really see any significant changes on 250 itself, about 1.5%. Even the Polo Grounds Road connector would not divert a lot of traffic. But if we started looking at alternatives, either as a two-lane linkage from Rio Road to Route 20 and over to 250, or a four-lane linkage from Rio Road to Route 20 to 250, that's where we began to see some more significant diversions off of US 250. And again, it's kind of following back along, where's the traffic coming from, where's it going to? It's mostly traffic, you know, south of Polo Grounds Road that wants to try to get across the river some way or the other, and if you provide a better option for them, that's the route they will take. When we looked at that in terms of what does that mean in terms of the peak hour versus the daily, I said, well, you can see some variations there because people's patterns are a little bit different over the course of a whole day than they are just during a particular peak period in the morning or in the afternoon. But basically, in all those situations, the numbers come out looking very similar for the alternative three concept in terms of how much is diverted from 250 during the p.m. peak hour during the day, whether it's a two-lane facility or a four-lane facility. And the reason we looked at the four-lane facility there was when we tested it as a two-lane, it basically filled up to the capacity or actually beyond the desirable capacity of a two-lane roadway. So it's saying there's more demand than a two-lane link would really be able to adequately accommodate, you know, so, which is why we evaluated testing a four-lane facility. Another way to display that is to say, well, what are the implications in terms of how bad the level of congestion is likely to be in the future if we do option one or option two or option three? So this graphic kind of shows what the projected changes are in terms of how many hours during an average weekday would you expect to see very high levels of congestion on the Ravanna River Bridge that carries 250 and Route 20. Looking at the base year 2005 numbers, it's about 1.3 hours a day, so about 45 minutes or so in the morning, a little bit less than 45 minutes in the morning and the afternoon. A little bit more than that in 2006 as the numbers come up with the real counts on that. Then if we do the next step over to the year 2025 with the constrained long-range plan, it's saying basically the amount of time that would be very severely congested would about double. It would go up to about 4.3 hours per day on a typical weekday. And then what are the implications with the different alternatives? Alternative 1, Profit Road, makes a minor change. Alternative 2, Polo Grounds Road, makes a minor change. It's only the alternative 3 corridor improvements, either as a 2-lane or a 4-lane, that begin to make a more significant, more noticeable change in how badly congested the 250 bridge would be. So that's kind of the basic, you know, concept of what the implication would be from a traffic standpoint. One other thing that we looked at, since it's a question that's come up from time to time, particularly regard to the Pantops project, was, well, what happens if we had another bridge to the south of where the 250 bridge was that might link from Pantops Boulevard back over to the city of Charlottesville street system? And if we did that and really then created three river crossings, you know, the existing 250 bridge, a new crossing a little bit to the north, and a new crossing a little bit to the south, what would the implications be? And that actually brings down the level of congestion on 250 as well. And remember back to those flow diagrams we had of 25% of the traffic in the morning coming into town on High Street, 35% of the traffic in the afternoon coming out and making a right turn on the High Street. That would be a lot of that traffic shifting to that third bridge, which was just tested as a two-lane crossing. So it says, well, there does seem to be some demand there. And this is something where there were some difference of opinion of how far along we should study this between the steering committee and the steering committee members from the city. But it does kind of illustrate, yes, there would be some additional effects if you had a more comprehensive system of facilities to allow everybody to go across, whether it's bicycles, pedestrians, transit, general vehicles.
And I suppose for political reasons, you didn't do the last two bars without alternative three.
We talked about that and said no, that wouldn't really be good. We wanted to kind of show what the incremental changes would be. I mean, you know, in theory you could test it just with, you know, those linkages, and I think that was something that the city members of the steering committee were very concerned about, saying, well, wait a minute, this is a joint project. Let's try to have a joint analysis done as opposed to trying to have all this through traffic or all this other traffic diverted onto the city street system.
But that's all city traffic to begin with.
Even though it's people coming in to go to work and go
it,
to
well, it depends upon how you define city traffic. Some people would say a city trip is one where the origin is in the city and the destination is in the city. That clearly is a city trip. If the origin is in the city and the destination is in the county, is that a city trip or a county trip or half of each?
Well, that would make it a joint project then.
Yeah.
I'm sure you did. There's quite a bit of discussion in the committee.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I see Juan over there smiling.
Somewhat animated from
but
time to time.
One point I wanted to make about that is of course, just to remember for everybody that when Martha Jefferson is built, they're going to connect that Pantops Drive such that you could actually take it all the way from Pantops Drive where it comes out next to 64 and it would run all the way down to the shopping center.
Right, but you can't cross the bridge.
Can't cross the bridge.
Absent
the bridge. You don't have it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm sure no one asked you to model if there's a bicycle pedestrian bridge from Martha Jefferson Hospital into Woolen Mills area.
We did not evaluate that. I understand that that is an idea that is being discussed right now, and I think it's one that probably has some merit because it does provide a way for other people to get across there. And I think it's something where you can kind of say, well, any of the options that we considered, and we brought some typical roadway cross sections to say, well, by definition, any of the concepts we have from a design standpoint include a bicycle path, include pedestrian paths. By definition, anything that can accommodate a regular vehicle can accommodate transit vehicles. So we're saying any of the concepts we assessed were all assumed to be multimodal by their very nature.
That said, did you do analysis for the scenario where we have a significantly expanded transit system?
We did not, and the reason for that is that at the time we were doing our analysis, the travel demand forecasting model for the region did not have a transit mode choice element as part of it. What that basically is it's a piece of the model chain that says if these are the travel times between point A and point B, and here is the type of trip, is it a work trip, a shopping trip, a school trip, whatever, and the characteristics of the people, what percentage of them, based upon ridership surveys of the current ridership, would likely use transit, whether it's an existing bus system, an enhanced bus system with more frequent service, a dedicated right-of-way facility transit system, whether it be bus rapid transit or light rail or whatever it might be. That was not in the model. We understand that the work that Virginia DOT is sponsoring in conjunction with the Metropolitan Planning Organization, there's a better model being created that does have that component, and that's the kind of thing that will be enhanced even more with the information coming from these new household surveys to really let you test in a much more realistic fashion what the benefits, what the implications would be of putting more assets into transit.
These things all came up in the discussions over the last 2 years, and there was a lot of discussion about what you might call mission creep or kind of getting outside the bounds of where we were, what we were supposed to be doing there, because we talked about transit-only crossings, we talked about pedestrian crossings. And
Ken, to be fair, though, at the second meeting, I brought up the idea that a couple of folks in the NPO at the time were discussing, which was a fourth option, which would have a transit-only route that would take Penn Park Lane, cut along the side of, but not go through, the park property and cross Meadow Creek and then end up down on River Road. And if we were going to have a bus rapid transit backbone, which is something we're seriously considering in the expanded transit system, it would be a logical place then to have a transit station at River Road right by the bypass. And we've got a substantial amount of flow of cars coming in, as we've seen from this presentation, from the east that could be doing a park and ride, get over the bridge on a bus, and then hit our system and be dispersed to wherever they wanted to go. And similarly, folks coming down from the north. I brought that suggestion to the table and asked that it be considered as another option. Obviously, it ended up either being considered and rejected, or maybe because of the transportation model defects, it wasn't practical to consider. But my struggle with us as we go forward, and we're going to have to probably do something today, I'm not the least bit comfortable with these three options as being the three options, and I'm certainly not comfortable representing RIO, no surprise, with having us go forward with a recommendation that's very strongly opposed by my constituents, and I agree with them. I think there are other opportunities for us to get the notion of an Eastern Connector right that might require us to wait until, A, we have better origin and destination data, and, B, we see where we are or are not going with our transit system in the next couple of years, because those two factors could greatly impact the outcome of the Eastern Connector location discussion. And I'm not sure that it's entirely fruitful for us to go forward and endorse these.
I think I can. I think that's one of the reasons why one of those early action activities that we had in the recommendations, and I've got another series of those into this presentation as well, is to say, well, we haven't answered all the questions. And I think these next couple slides kind of highlight that. There are a lot of issues associated with any of these alternatives, from physical, environmental, cost, any implication that you want to look at, because it's a very changing community. Because there's a lot of things going on here. And I think that you use the best available tools that are accessible at the time that you have them available to use. And I think one of the things that we saw as well, there's a need for looking at this corridor, and it is a corridor, that would link Rio Road over to 20 and then over to 250 and say, what are the best options for that given the best available information that we have to assess it? If we have better planning tools to do that, then yes, you could look at those other alternatives.
Lewis, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Was there any look at if you have traffic coming over through Penn Park, which is the route that gathered the most traffic off of Rio Road, and put it onto Route 20, what that does at the Route 20 250 intersection, which is a very difficult intersection already. So, in other words, if you're just crossing the bridge half a mile east or north, but you're being driven back to 250, you know, we're talking about spending, the least expensive alternative estimate here is $40 million. And so I certainly would wonder how much relief that's actually going to provide you on that 250 corridor to simply leg around what would amount to about a half a mile of 250.
Well, and that's a very good question. I think that one of the things that we tried to do and kind of testing to say, well, you can't just, you know, bring a crossing over to Route 20 and then forget about it. That you really need to kind of say, well, it needs to tie into the whole system. And that's why if you look at the Pantops Master Plan, there's a multimodal transportation system that's shown on there. There's a network of streets and local roads. And I think you'd be saying that one of the things you'd do, and we tested a little bit, to say, well, you want to spread the traffic out on both sides as best you can. You know, because particularly with this as the title of the project, again, is the Eastern Connector. You know, so you're saying it's not a regional bypass. It's a road designed to serve more locally oriented traffic. You know, so you want to have multiple ways to access the corridor and multiple ways to disperse from the corridor. So it really has to have a good system on both the east side of the river and the west side of the river to tie into. And a lot of that is just kind of the natural growth and evolution and development of areas like Pantops.
We didn't specifically look at the impact on the 2250 intersection of driving additional traffic down Route 20 as opposed to bringing it across the bridge.
We didn't highlight that specifically. We do have some information on that that would give us a somewhat reasonable approximation. There were some early concepts that we talked about at the steering committee meetings about, well, maybe we need to go to some type of a grade separated interchange. You know, at that location, you know, and there are some pluses and minuses with doing something like that. Number one, they're expensive, as you know from looking at Meadow Creek Parkway as it ties into 250.
Been trying to get several built on Route 29 now for about 30 years.
That's true. And I think it is a way to really segregate, you know, some of the major traffic flows. It's an expensive solution, no doubt about that. But in terms of reducing the level of congestion, they can be very effective.
What you've clearly done is made a case that neither Prophet Road nor Polo Grounds Road offer a great deal of solution to our problem. And even absent good foundational data on origin and destination, it isn't going to be dramatically different than what you've got. And so there's some value to the community in having those looked at objectively and clearly, I think, eliminated. You've also highlighted the fact that we actually do have to solve this problem of Free Bridge, that the level of service failure that we're confronting imminently is going to prove to be really problematic. And so, I mean, I guess the question is, how do we want to be moving forward?
I think one of the problems with that, David, is that here lies the problem between what the city wants and what the county wants. I think clearly, and this is brought up many times, I thought that what we as a county wanted was to alleviate the congestion on 250. And that might be best served by a bridge on the other side of 250 and the High Street route to it. We really didn't look at that because the city said, no, the purpose of this study is to figure out how we can lessen the number of cars that are driving through our city. And then if you think about it, well, he was a representative of the city on that board. And if you think about it, that's two different approaches to something that might lead you into different conclusions. And I think that was sort of an impasse we had trying to recognize each person's position.
I think we've gotten illumination from this exercise. I think that we've also identified some further options that need exploration. One is a southern crossing when I say southern, I mean south of the existing free bridge, crossing of the Rivanna. A second thing to consider.
That's really a city decision. I mean, we can't
force that to happen. We can point out the traffic impacts of it not happening. It's a conversation we might want to have at the MPO where the city has current representation that we could discuss it with. The other thing we've learned is we have a problem and we don't necessarily have a solution to it. I'm just not sure that our taking the recommendation of the third alternative is timely. I think that there's real benefit in having good origin and destination studies and waiting till we see what we do with regional transit in the next couple of years. I think each of those factors could potentially greatly inform what's the right strategic move here with an Eastern Connector, and I wouldn't want to go down a path prematurely, stir up a hornet's nest, when in fact that may not be what we ultimately figure out as the best solution.
Well, for some time I've said about this project that the chance of getting the money to do it is, in our lifetime, is probably not there. I mean, we spent, 30 years accumulating $25 million to build the Bennett Creek Parkway. There are people who are here now that weren't here earlier when VDOT came and told us that after having a 44% cut in transportation funds last year, we're expecting another 30% cut this year.
Added on to that
prior 44%, which was already just about half of what it had been 10 years ago. So there's no money. And clearly the close-in route wouldn't qualify for primary road funds under any formula for primary road funds that I've seen. So
we've talked about that. Is that true?
Well, it's a situation where we didn't specify what the funding source would be on it. It's a situation where if you're looking to connect Rio Road, which is a secondary road,
right,
with Route 20, which is a primary, and 250, which is a primary, you can do that a couple different ways. You could do it with another secondary road, or you could say, well, maybe we want to upgrade or convert the classification of Rio Road, maybe all the way from Route 29 over to 250 and make that a new primary road. You can have short sections of primary
roads. There's another modality or another pot of money I talked with Quentin over, which is that if we considered having a bridge over the Rivanna that brought not only cars across but a transit function across that went up to Gasoline Alley and connected with the commuter rail line running from the city out to that intersection along that north-south rail line, that we would be eligible for intermodal funds, and it might change the funding dynamic significantly for the entire project. So there are a lot of other ways, if you will, to look at primary money.
Well, in the period of time I've been involved in transportation, we tried for years and years to get what at the time was the second part of the Meadow Creek Parkway designated as a primary road. Never satisfied the criteria, and that road would seem to me to meet more of the requirements than this short leg probably would. And so I think, part of the question here is how much of the additional money do we want to spend on a concept that, given the current funding climate, which could change, it may 3 or 4 years from now, there could be a change in what's going on, and we're going to have a very limited scope of things we can accomplish with our own county-generated transportation money and the minimal state money we're getting. And the question is, how much more do we spend at this time on this project when we have many, many other needs for projects that are already in the plan that we know we need and that there's some unanimity that ought to be done?
I agree with that, but I wouldn't want to send the signal to the city that we're abandoning the notion of an Eastern Connector. But I think maybe an additional way to frame it is to say, out of deference to the funding realities and out of recognition of the fact that there will be origin and destination data available in the not-too-distant future, and in consideration of the fact that we're trying to address some of our transportation challenges through an expanded transit system, which the city, hopefully will also participate in, that we want to hold this in abeyance until we have the opportunity to come back to it based on better information in maybe 2 or 3 years.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, as I said, the funding situation could change dramatically. But right now, I would be very hesitant to plow further money into this until it does.
So how many more slides do you have to do?
Just a small handful. Let me run through it real quickly.
So
again, one of the things that we highlighted here on these next couple of slides is there are still a lot of unresolved issues. There are historic sites. There are conservation districts. There are major things like Urbana River sensitivity. Polo Grounds Road, you have a lot of those same issues. You know, for Alternative 3, there are a lot of communities, you know, potentially impacted depending on the specific alignment you might check, as well as the potential implications of impacts on Penn Park and or Darden-Tow Park.
With the park potential implications, would we be required to do full studies on these other routes, even if from a traffic standpoint it looked like they were not feasible?
It's a situation where I think the work that's been done so far is what's done a lot of times at kind of the early stages of a larger environmental study. So you've kind of reached a point where you say, well, we think we have at least a preferred corridor, not a specific alignment, but a preferred corridor. You know, and saying we know that within this preferred corridor, which from everything we've seen seems to have the most benefit from a transportation perspective, seems to focus on the needs that we've identified, there are clearly some issues that need to be resolved. Some of them are, you know, minimizing any of the impacts on any of these park facilities.
Right. If you were to qualify for federal dollars, that requirement is a very heightened requirement.
It is a high level of assessment that's required on that, but it's something where the federal government over the last couple of years has been kind of modifying the 4F process to say that, well, if you're looking at something that is a very minimal impact on the basic function, the basic reason for having a park or historic site or something, we'll look at that, and if we concur that it is a minimum effect, we will give you approval. You know, in the case of where it's come up in a number of places around the country, it's saying, well, yes, we clearly have an impact on Park X. We're talking about taking maybe a 5-foot buffer strip adjacent to the existing roadway. Is that a significant impact or not? Well, if there's no park-related activities within 200 or 300 or 400 feet or more of that, you know, 5-foot edge, maybe we can accept that.
I think we'd have significant public input in that deliberative process that would weigh in, and that every square inch of those parks is in urgent need of use.
And I think you answered this question once before, but my favorite idea has been to have the road that goes through any portion of the parks be just a transit bike road. But I think that in previous conversation you said that would not be any easier to get through the 4F process than a full-fledged road. Is that still your view?
That is correct, because anything you're looking for that's any type of a transportation improvement that's utilizing federal funds or really any other federal action that might be affecting that parkland, you'd still have to go through the 4F process.
Might make change the dynamics of the public participation process a little bit, though. How difficult, based on the traffic modeling, would it be to determine the impact on the 2250 intersection of if you built Alternative 3? I think that just in looking at this preliminarily, we need to get a little bit better understanding of what you actually accomplish by moving traffic over to 20 and then driving it back to 250 in terms of the overall traffic impact on that, you know, that area that you drew a quarter-mile radius around that intersection, including the bridge. You know, how is traffic flow through there actually impacted?
Without origin and destination studies, you couldn't meaningfully capture that, because you'd be stuck with your flow that's coming down now, and it is
a little bit more difficult. Again, you'd have to have a longer list of assumptions that you could have on there. Number one, and number two, it's a situation where the current traffic forecasting model for the region basically generates daily trip estimates over a 24-hour period. So you kind of lose some of the sensitivity that you're looking for to say what happens during the morning peak hour or the afternoon peak hour. Now, what we were able to do is applying some techniques that we've used on other projects and other communities, typically larger communities, to say, well, you can kind of slice the trip table from a 24-hour table into 24 one-hour duration trip tables. So you get a somewhat better understanding of what's happening, but it's not precise.
The challenge you have is the flow of cars coming down along 29 from north of Rio that go now down to 29 and 250 you have no modeling tool that can help you determine what percentage of those would reallocate over to an Eastern connector at any time of the day, because you don't have a basis to come up with a number.
Well, but why wouldn't it be the same?
It'd be the same.
Yeah, it's the same as any projection of the 20.
Well, the current model gave 6% of the people going to Pantops would be turning right on Park Street.
Those flow pattern graphics with the red graphics on there, those were based upon the actually observed traffic counts collected several years ago in connection with the Meadow Creek Parkway 250 interchange study.
Were they collected before or after Park Street was widened? I'm just curious.
I believe they were collected.
Widened. Park Street.
Repaved, you mean?
Well, when they took the curves and they made them more gentle, it made it a lot more appealing.
It actually will depend on which part of Park Street. Are you talking about at the big curve where they
closed it for 6 months and made it a lot more tempting to go that way from 29 than it used to be, but still not great.
I think those counts were taken. I believe 2005.
Okay, so
like
they're
that.
After that was done.
Well, he's got a number. He determined the number of number of vehicles per day that would be taken off, based upon all the assumptions, by building route for alternative three. How many vehicles would be taken off of Free Bridge? Presumably, all that traffic is hitting Route 20. By far, most of that traffic would be coming back to 250, mm-hmm. because there's not a whole lot to go to the other direction on 20. So presumably that 9,000 vehicles a day is going to be, or close to it, is going to be hitting that intersection. So, I mean, certainly it's I think it's important to get some understanding of what you actually accomplish in that quarter.
I thought you meant the other intersection of 250.
By spending $40 million to build this little leg.
Now, and there
takes you a half mile around.
Right, and there is one way to get at least a reasonable approximation of what I think you're looking for. We have done select link analyses for the 250 bridge, you know, and that's kind of just a snapshot to say, of all the traffic using that one single link that you've identified, where is it generally coming from and where is it generally going to? We could also move that location, that link analysis point up to the new Ravanna River Crossing Bridge and say, well, for that Ravanna River Bridge on alternative three, generally where is that traffic coming from and where is it going to, and kind of compare the two side by side to say, if we don't have it, here's what it is. If we do have it, here's what it is.
See, I think that's important, because if you drive 9,000 more vehicles a day into that intersection on 250 and 20, you'd have to increase the light sequence substantially for traffic coming off of 20 onto 250. Mm-hmm. That would hold up traffic coming down and up 250. So I don't know how much you actually improve. You know, vehicle counts are one thing, but traffic movement is another.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you did. And that's when people came up with the 1 minute or something improvement.
Yeah, and again, that was looking at the kind of what's the average travel time savings over the whole day, because there's sometimes during the day when there's virtually no differential in the travel time, and others when it might be more significant. But again, it's kind of all part of the process. And I think, you know, again, we've been talking about cost, and yes, there are big numbers involved with here.
Just did the level of service at that intersection.
We can do that. It will again have to be one based upon a lot of assumptions, because typically for level of service you want, you know, more precise, you know, level of detail than what we have available through the current model. But we can at least get a reasonable approximation of what it looks like. And most of the model work focuses on the segments of streets as opposed to each individual intersection. But we can get a reasonable approximation. It's a wide range of costs.
At this short, but we've got another session coming up here.
Okay, well, I think I've got just the last couple things on here. And again, I think what we were saying is, okay, those short-term actions, what we do the next 1 to 3 years, you know, continue things along, you know, try to add that concept into the fiscally constrained long-range plan, designate those other two, alternative one and two, as unfunded needs, and I think maybe most importantly is undertake and complete the more detailed plan and engineering environmental studies for alternative three, where we could look at, with the better tools, what happens if it was a transit-only link, as an example.
if I can make a suggestion, we have staff has made two recommendations, and I would recommend a third option that isn't listed here, which is that instead of forging ahead and spending money on more study of the permitting requirements, and instead of holding a public hearing over something that, as Dennis points out, isn't going to be happening anytime soon, I would suggest that what we do as a board today is refer this matter to the MPO for further discussion with regard to what the city, through its representation on the MPO, thinks is an appropriate next step. And my suggestion to the MPO will be that we hold off on any doing anything further. We don't kill the Eastern Connector because clearly we have a choke point of traffic here, but that we hold off until the next couple of years have passed and we see what the funding circumstances have evolved into. We look where we are with transit and we see what we have in terms of available origin and destination data and then decide how to proceed. So my suggestion is that we go back to the MPO and recommend that the city agree to put this on hold for 2 or 3 years.
I would agree with that approach. I think additional information that's going to be forthcoming with respect to the transit study will help this. We need to ultimately find some creative solution to this problem because a $40 million price tag on a project that would have to go through the park and may never be approved because of the park impacts. I'm not real interested right now in spending another $250,000 or whatever it might take to further do these additional preliminary studies.
Solutions are good.
That's just about it. Allie?
Yes. I think that, as was said, we don't want to be the ones that puts the Eastern Connector idea totally away because we have an agreement with the city and they already suspect we're not serious about this. So taking it to the MPO for further discussion, getting specifically to get the city input, and also specific information that we realize is coming down the pike in the next couple of years would be probably a good move. But I'd also like us to continue to be creative in our thinking. I mean, it's possible that something as small as a bike pedestrian bridge over the Rivanna close to Martha Jefferson Hospital could take off a significant amount of new traffic that otherwise is going to have to go across this bridge. That's probably being pie in the sky, but we've got to somehow get creative about this. Your charts very clearly showed we've got a major problem in that intersection.
Definitely is. Yeah. Well, and I'm not convinced, again, without understanding what happens at that Route 20 intersection, that's even a solution. I'm not sure that even if you spent the $40 million to build that section, you would improve the traffic flow in that corridor at all because you'd have to so much increase the sequence for the traffic coming off of Route 20 onto 250 and an additional.
I think that's one thing that the committee came to the conclusion early on that there was, as we used to call it, there's no silver bullet. One thing that's going to solve that problem there. So we.
And the roundabouts to replace that intersection would cost about as much as the road.
But I want to, before we let you go, Lewis, I want to thank you so much for the work. You know, this gentleman's got the patience of Job because putting up with the diversity of that committee, as you can imagine, and he and his staff and the people with him were just did an excellent job of trying to orchestrated through that, and I think this is certainly your information is valuable. I think it's just a matter of money, like it usually is.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for your work.
Actually, I had a little bit more hair when I started this.
Thank you.